Okay, I think we can start, and so this is our GRC call on 10th April, and I think we haven't received any apologies. It seems like I haven't seen any. Let's start with, can we start with the approval guideline? Team, have you got it from Stephen? Just to remind you, Stephen went through bylaws and compiled the initial draft of the guideline. Then I tried to go through it and make it into our template. Tried to simplify the language, that is the way I understood it. Then Bart edited my edit, and then it was presented to Stephen. I think he was a little bit shocked to see his draft reborn, let's say. And that's why, and he added a layer of, not shocked, okay. Stephen wasn't shocked, but still heavily edited the redraft of mine. Yeah, so, and at the end it was so difficult to read that apparently Stephen had to accept all the changes in the document, or he sent it to Kim. And now I would love to give the floor to Stephen to talk a little bit more about this guideline presented to the group, and there are some things that we need to discuss. So, Stephen, go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me all right?
Well, we can hear you. I wouldn't say it's all right, but there's some...
I think it's...
Fans.
I got a little, yeah, I can't, there's nothing I can do with that because I've got three machines and the other two machines have decided it was time to upgrade Adobe and it's taking forever for them to come online. If I can get one upgraded properly, I will switch to it during the course of this call. As Katrina said, I put together an initial cut on this, circulated it to her and Bart. Katrina did an admirable job translating it into what we use for our form guidelines. Bart looked it over, marked it up some. I looked it over, marked it up some. And what we have in front of us at the moment is what I'm now calling draft version 2, which incorporates Katrina's concerns. Especially, the base of this is Katrina's rewrite of mine, followed with her comments and tweaks, followed by Bart's comments and tweaks, followed by my comments and tweaks, cleaned up so we have a basis to start with draft version 2. And it's all, this is scrollable, yeah. It's all pretty straightforward with the intro and background, purpose of the guideline. Under general provisions, section of interest is 3.11 with a concept that I've describing as the approval action manager. I'm giving the chair the opportunity to either be the person on point for an approval action issue or pass that responsibility off for coordinating what the CC community does with regards to interaction with the ECA, the ICANN staff, ICANN corporate secretary, and other decisional participants off to another CCNSO council member if the chair so chooses. So that's what 3.11 does. 3.12 simply defines the obligations of the approval action manager with respect to attending any conference call. The ECA may request ICANN to schedule prior to the community forum. Want the approval action issue manager to attend the community forum, represent the community in that forum, attend any additional community forums that ICANN board or the ECA may schedule. There is an option in the bylaws for the ICANN board to request additional community forums if they didn't like the way the first one went. I find that interesting, but Section 3.2 is kind of an overview of how the communication path will work with regards to getting the CCNSAG organized, archiving what went on during the course of the community's involvement with a particular community forum, approval forum. Section 4 is getting into less solid territory at the moment. We have 4.1 is pretty solid. 4.2 regarding how, as you can see there, need to decide upon and document how the community relates to questions, concerns, comments regarding the approval action, board notice, back to the council, et cetera, et cetera. Section 4.3 is a follow-on to that, which is how we, represent ourselves before the forum and the teleconference calls, et cetera, section. Section 4.4 defines the council's voting mechanisms for handling this. We have a tight time frame of 21 days after the approval action forum, community forum, to make a decision. And if I've done the math correctly, council would be able to make a decision and put it out for community approval within that time frame, assuming that the initial council meeting, which would have to be held a week after the conclusion of the approval action community forum and the publication of the meeting agenda, which would happen immediately at the conclusion of the community forum. We have, I believe, if I've done the math correctly, we have one shot at actually being able to render a decision. Otherwise, we'd go into a no decision mode on the basis of a community objection from our community, and thus we would abstain as a decisional participant from rendering an opinion on this particular approval notice. So that's what 4.4 is about. And 5 is boilerplate regarding, regarding the guideline, et cetera, and, what it is. This is the usual table of roles and responsibilities and assignments. And last but not least, I include an Appendix A, which is a glossary, which covers terms relating to both approval actions as defined in NSD and rejection petitions also as defined in NSD, because I intend to use the same glossary for the rejection petition guideline forthcoming. So the front half of this guideline, I would say, is pretty solid. When we get into Section 4, it starts getting a little softer because we just haven't fleshed that all out yet. And that's the stuff in tax in 4.2, 4.3. So that's kind of where we are with it. I don't think it's too far from being finished at this point. I thank Katrina and Bart for their work on it as well. And that's where we stand on that. That's all I have at the moment.
Thank you very much, Steven. Are there any questions? We'll start with questions. I know that you haven't seen this before. Oh, you've seen Steven's, the first draft of Steven's sent. Now it's changed its shape and the wording slightly. Now it's a new, almost, well, we have to read it from scratch, frankly. So, any question? If no, maybe we can start discussing, for example, 4.2 and 4.3 some proposals. What do we need there? Maybe it's too difficult if you haven't read the whole thing. Yeah, David, I see your hands up.
Katrina, thank you. It's David McCauley for the transcript. Pardon me. I may have missed this on the list. I apologize, so I'm coming up to speed now. But with respect to 4.2 and 4.3, first of all, let me thank Stephen and you and Bart for the work that you've done on this, because it looks to me to be in pretty good shape, very good shape. And so thanks for all the work on it. With respect to 4.2 and 4.3, one of the complications here, one of the challenges, rather, is the speedy time that needs to be kept in mind for action in this regard. And so it seems to me that one thing we might consider is emailing the CCNSO members, but requesting a very fast turnaround. And what that might entail, one management tool that might entail, is an annual reminder to people that says a couple of things. It says, one, the approval action manager was selected with these kinds of skills in mind, and we need to trust that manager and the council chair to work together. And members need to understand that when they get a notice, maybe we should have a standard notice in the subject line. When they get a notice, they need to respond quickly, and then they need to simply trust that their input will be taken into account. And so I think that we need to underscore that people have been chosen for these roles with a purpose and with the understanding that it requires a fast turnaround. People will be given a chance to give input, but then that input will be acted upon, and maybe we should remind people once a year that this is what's happening. Thank you. That's a suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I like the idea about some specific keywords in the subject line. I think this is something really worth incorporating into the guidelines. Yes, Stephen.
David, I love how you summarized that, because that's my feeling on that exactly. You may not be aware of it because you're not on the list, but Katrina actually put out a notice, I guess about a week ago now, on the CC list, giving everybody a heads up that we've got this approval action coming up. We'll have a forum in Johannesburg explaining to the community why it's important, so on and so forth. And myself have been heartened by the volume of responses to Katrina's notes that have trickled in over the past week from various CCPLBs offering support and comments on the upcoming approval notice. But I agree with you completely with regards to your thoughts on periodic reminders to the community and putting faith in the approval manager, et cetera, et cetera. That's awesome.
Okay, thanks, Stephen. I have to tell that the idea to send this informative email belongs to Stephen, and he was the one who drafted the email. But one thing worried me is that people started responding and expressing support. I'm really worried because I don't know what to do with the thing. But my understanding is that, approval action is triggered by a specific set of things, as it's they are said in the introduction on the bylaw. So one thing, we have public comment period when we can comment on the proposal. Well, personally, this one is pretty straightforward, but in case the proposal is complicated, though it's not as simple as the current one, if people start supporting it now, it might be a little bit premature, because after the public comment period ends, the proposal may change its shape, or something. And at the end, the board will adopt something different. And then we will have to ask people to start supporting this new thing. And I think it might be a little bit confusing. I would prefer people to read the proposal now and give us give the council and guidance after this. What was the forum's name? We still haven't memorized it. after a pro-election community forum when we have 21 days to decide whether to support objective exchange. We will need input then during this 21 day after the conclusion of approval action community forum. Now, at some point, I understand that people expect us, the CCNSO, to submit comments during public comment period. And perhaps this is not what we expected. Stephen, I see your hand is up. Yes.
If I could offer a few points of clarification. This email that Katrina sent out was, in my mind, intended simply to be an informational email. I was actually kind of surprised to see various CCPLDs weighing in with an opinion on the forthcoming bylaw change. So we kind of jumped the gun on that. I will admit that. It is, however, a completely uncontroversial change, and I think it's pretty much cast in concrete at the board level at this point. But I agree with Katrina that going forward, we need to get CCs to hold off on rendering opinions on a proposed action approval notice until such time as the board has made their decision, so we know as a community what that decision actually is in detail. And we have received the approval notice from the board. Now, during the 30-day period between the submission by the board to the entire community of the approval action notice and the convening of the forum, unless the forum is deferred to the next public ICANN meeting, in which case we have a larger, longer comment period, it is during that period, a minimum of 30 days, that we need to solicit, compile, and sort through and get a sense as to what our community thinks of this approval notice that the board is throwing at our feet, so that the approval action manager is in a position to represent our community at the public forum. So that's just to clarify a little bit about the timing that Katrina was referring to. The 21-day period at the conclusion of the public forum is our window to, as a community, come up with a decision, if we can, with respect to our viewpoint regarding the board's approval action notice. So just a little clarification there. The 30-day period, 30-day or longer period running up to the forum is when we need to solicit comments from our community so that council can have a better sense of how to represent communities in this and direct the approval action manager to with respect to representing our viewpoint in the public forum. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Alejandra, I thought Alejandra had her hand up. Anyone wants to comment? Okay, if not, then I suggest that we all read this guideline in its current wording. I think that we need to, approval action is, this is the easy one. Rejection thing will be way more complicated. But this is still something, an exercise for us. I prefer that we all read it. Then I think we should draw a diagram of how this whole process looks. What is expected from whom on which stage of this process. And then, of course, we are looking forward for your ideas for 2, 4, 3, and for all other sections on this. I like Bart's suggestion. Also read Annex B. Yes, it would be really great to read Annex D. This is something that, in case you have insomnia or something, it's really very helpful. The best tool ever. Yeah, okay, great. Stephen has already the flow chart. Yeah. Yeah, just send it to me. I will make it, use some graphic tools to make it, unless it's already beautiful and shiny. Okay, so can we agree on that? So we read, we suggest. Okay, probably let's start by the thing that we put it into Google Docs so that everyone can read. Alejandra, may we interrupt you with this, because you're a master of Google Docs. So you, if you could put it and send it to everyone. David, I saw your hand was up. Were you typing now?
I was just going to say, Katrina, the guideline that we were to read is the one that you sent on April the 4th. I'm searching for that mail now, but now that you've asked Alejandra to put it in the Google Doc, that answers my question, because I'll look forward to getting that doc, and I'd like Bart's suggestion about reading Annex D Section 1, so I'll do that too.
Yeah, that's a very good suggestion. I think only Stephen and Tim have the current document version, even I haven't seen it. After Stephen did his magic on this document. So, okay. Let's move forward with this then. Kim will send it to Alejandra, and Alejandra will publish it. Or Kim can do that. If that's okay with her. Okay, so let's move to next agenda item. Okay, this is another one on the thickness of roles and responsibilities. As I already mentioned during the last call, when I opened this document, I wasn't remotely impressed by our work, one of our first babies, so to speak. I see that it needs a lot of work. So to make sure that it can be used for distribution of roles on the council. So there are several things. One thing is I added a little bit restructured and added more information as proposed by Stephen after our latest council meeting. That's one thing. Another thing that question that I got is shouldn't this be under the thickness of council practices, the guideline we just recently adopted? Again, I'm not sure you have you've had time to read it. Sorry, I sent it only on Friday. Yeah. So what I added here, I added current list of roles. We had responsibilities already in the previous version. Well, the roles, as I could define them, so it's Teaching Council Leadership, a member of Travel Funding Committee, member on the Triage Committee, and overseer of membership applications. And then some ideas how we handle council leadership elections in case we have several candidates. What is more important is that here we finally write the rule, the unwritten rule we usually have is that this leaders of the business or council are supposed to be not to be from the same region. So the unwritten rule we always try to follow, but by now it has never been clearly written in any of the guidelines. Election of the chair, election of the vice chairs. And then members of committees, according to their own charters. Because our committees, they have charters. And then overseer of membership applications. My understanding is that we have one, and then we have some substitutes. It's not here, or maybe at this moment we don't have substitutes anymore. Yeah, so I tried to explain what this overseer is supposed to do. I changed in 4.1 and 4.2 some wording, especially in 4.1. Where we had a reference to old bylaws. Okay. Any questions? If not, just read this document and share your views. Again, it would be nice to have this document on Google Docs, just as we agreed during our face-to-face meeting in Copenhagen over there. So from now on, we're going to have our documents in Google Docs. Okay, great, Alejandra. Just at this point, accept all the changes. If somebody wants to see changes, you can refer back to the Word document, but don't delete the comment. I think we have only one comment here. At this moment, yes, only one comment. Okay. David, please, have a question?
Thanks, Katrina. David again. I'm wondering if we should have a bullet item in the responsibilities of the leadership that says something along the lines of what we were just speaking about, something like, in order to ensure that the CCNSO is well represented in empowered community decision making, in instances where there is a time crunch, you know, the leadership will be available to discuss with the approvals manager and do their best to represent CCNSO in cases where there's insufficient time to poll all the members. I don't know if we need to say that, but I thought I'd mention it as a question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, David. Just now I thought that, yeah, but definitely have to refer to some responsibilities and roles highlighted in other guidelines, for example, about our representative on public community administration and others. I think we definitely should have a reference to that, that councillors need to perform some activities, take roles and responsibilities according to other guidelines. But, yeah, this definitely should be included. I don't know if we need to spell out everything. Well, we can do, and say that the links, references to the guidelines. Well, I'm not a big fan of inserting the reference to particular documents in the guidelines because references may change, and then we just get lost. But we can do that. We can do that. Okay. Read this and please comment. Okay. Next we have council elections guidelines. This one luckily already is in Google Docs. I did some changes. Maybe just read through it. I see some people have already commented. Sorry, didn't have time to read it. Or those are probably old comments. At least some of them are old comments. I see my comment is the old one. Okay, so following the discussion we had in Copenhagen with the community, first I removed the reference to removal of the entire council, because apparently nobody was interested in removing the council. I think they believe that chances that all the councillors go mad at the same time are pretty low. But we have this removal of counselor. I tried to follow a proposal that we had, I think from Matthew, to look what's going on with how the community has can remove a director on the board, and it wasn't very helpful. Okay, can we scroll down, please? I think we cannot do it ourselves. Scroll down to. Down. Removal of. Down. Okay, removal of a counselor. So, any counselor may be removed by a majority of seats of members in the geographic region from which he or she was elected. And 3/4 majority vote of the sitting cell councillors. Again, that was taken from the bylaws of the removal of the director. I still have this three or more sitting cell members from a geographic region. Still, at least it didn't come up with any better. Any better proposal, but it's still open. So I added what the request should contain. Request that sent by the CSNSL members. So name of the councillor to be removed. CSNSL member who initiates the process. Supporting rationale in reasonable detail. That's taken from the bylaws, and then a proposal for mediation, something like mediation. So, for example, we can organize a questions and answer session with the counselor in question during the nearest CSNSL members meeting. And then what we are supposed to do upon the receival of the of this request? here we have some problem. I wrote that the chair of the teaching cell council shall invite the initiators and the counselor in question for the dialogue, but it can be the chair as well. So probably this shouldn't be so specific, certainly the chair or one of the vice chairs, in case it's the chair who is going to be removed. Then we have removal timeline. And then the rest of the process, as you can see. Then we have removal of counselor by the CSNSL council. Again, a little bit more about detail, and here I introduce the mediation committee. So we have two things. If a counselor is removed by the people in the by CSNSL or members, then during upcoming elections he may not be nominated again. And if a councillor is removed by the CSNSL council, then I wrote that the councillor may be nominated. And I see that Alejandro asks why, and Miriana also. Because it was the council that removed, the CSNSL members still may think different, and they may want the person to be on the council. Okay, that's That's the proposal. And I have also the role of NOMCOM appointed counselor, but it definitely needs to be discussed with NOMCOM. But I have a proposal here. Yeah, I see Bart has a hand up. Yes, Bart, please.
Thank you, Katrina. So with respect to the removal by the council, one question. Is that decision subject to the rules of the CCNSO? And if so, the question is, well, if there is no objection from the members, why you want to make life so complicated? Because ultimately the members can look at the rules, they can take a vote on the decision by the council.
Yes, they can. What do you mean by make life complicated?
Now, say why, in the sense that you create two regimes for, say, for renomination. Say, nominate in case removed by the members, but ultimately you can say this person, even after the decision of the council, but there is no vote, then in principle the there is no objection from the members of doing this.
Well, they may not object, but they... Well, they may not object, but it doesn't mean that they still may want him on the Yes, Bart?
It was just a consideration, is say, you can say, devise a whole set of rules, but up to one point, as long as, say, ultimately the members do have control of what is happening. So why, create these different, types of rules for different types of situations. But it's just my sense of it. But I think it's very important that the council decision is considered to be subject to the rules of the CCMSO.
Yeah, well, that definitely is subject of the rules of the CCMSO, but I think we have different threshold for those who can initiate initiate the vote on.
It was just one consideration, of course, my mind.
Yeah, I understand that. But first, this really concerns one geographic region, and I just think that the members should have the right to. Well, they changed their mind and just. Okay, they did not object to the decision in the first place, but they still have the opportunity to annoy the rest of the customers by reestablishing the person removed by the council. Or maybe, people may change. Okay, that's just a proposal. Again, I think that this is a check and balance, let's say. So members can select, but if they remove a person, that's a decision made by the seasonal members in the region, then they probably should not nominate the person again. Okay, that was my proposal. Again, please read it and comment, and let's see. Any other any other comments? Yeah. So this is something that's about the removal of non-common appointed counselors or something. Yeah, we need to discuss with non-com. I still don't have feedback from them on the questions to be asked. Okay. Anyway, this is. about the current set of guidelines we're working on. And in any other business, we have an email from David in which he tried to summarize everything around IRP.
Katrina, Martin has his hand up.
Martin, please.
Sorry, Katrina, if I put my hand up. Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Sorry, I put my hand up just at the tail end of the previous conversation. I had just a couple of little concerns that I thought might be useful for at least to sort of get down in front of colleagues earlier rather than doing it through comments later on. My first comment really is about the threshold for removing a councillor by the CCNSO members. And I know, you, Katrina, you said that the item is still open, but the three or more CCNSOs from a geographic region may initiate a proposal, a process to remove a councillor. And as I said before on a call, I find that sort of rather troubling in that three or more from some regions is a very, very low threshold, and three for one particular region is a very high threshold. And I think we actually perhaps need to think a little bit more strategically here about what is the purpose of having a threshold. If the threshold were to be a real threshold in that the majority of people in a region and majority of registrars in a region have lost confidence in their representative, then perhaps that is just simply a simple majority from a geographic region as being the trigger. Rather than just sort of having in one case rather more than a majority, and in other regions very much less than a majority. Now my second concern, and again this is something you mentioned as you went through, Katrina, and that was about sacking the whole of the council. Now, I personally agree with you that I think it is actually highly unlikely that CNSO will sort of turn en masse against its council and wish to get rid of them all. But I think the similarity I would draw is that under the ICANN accountability framework, it was deemed necessary to have a process for sacking the whole board of ICANN. And I would see a great similarity between the management of a supporting organization and the management of the whole of ICANN. And so I don't think I would really feel greatly comfortable with us just dismissing the concept that there might be need for sacking the whole of the council. And then when we were going about removal of the councillor by the CCNSO council, here I can actually see an issue where somebody who is representing their region quite adequately but is out of step with the rest of the council, could actually then trigger that sort of a thing where the council is having its say and the region itself is feeling, and perhaps other regions also seeing, that there are concerns in the way dissenting voices are dealt with. So I think that is actually just something we do need to think about and try and assess what is it that we actually want to do when we're talking about removing councillors either en masse or individually. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Martin. I will address your concerns. So first, about getting rid of the council. What I said was that we had consultation with the community in Copenhagen. We had show of cards, and well, nobody thought that we need a process for the entire council. That's why we're dropping it off. Not because, but we had it. We had a proposal. We were ready to discuss it with the community. The community said, no, we don't care about this. Okay, that's their wish. That's why we're not talking about it at this moment. About speaking about the council, getting rid of the councillor who's representing region adequately. Well, first of all, councillors are, even though they're elected from geographical regions, they do not, well, they serve on the council in the interest of the region, so not in the interest of their region. They, yes, they do represent their regions, but personally, I see them as, see councillors as commissioners on the European Commission. Yes, they are elected by a member state, but they do not represent the interests of the member state. They represent the Commission or the European Union. Yeah. So that's how I personally see councillors. But another point is that in the bylaws we have the right to remove a councillor. Maybe it wasn't the council, but. But if a councillor, the program does not show up, and currently, at this moment we have all the councillors are excellent and they do their job. But looking in the past and some other cases in the past, we had this problem: people do not show up, and if nobody cares in the region to initiate the process, then. Perhaps this is one of the ways that the council could actually step in. It's not necessary to have this process for the council, but this is one of the ways. I'm sure that it wouldn't be okay to remove an adequate council. Absolutely not. I agree with that. So we need to... something that to make sure that the council does not abuse this right. But I think that we don't have it anymore, but I think it says something about substantially needed behaviors or constant ignoring responsibilities. If somebody represents region adequately, should not qualify it as constantly ignoring responsibilities or misbehaves. The last point about the threshold, again, I mentioned this is a proposal. If you have another proposal, just write it down. But, personally, I do not think that we need that the majority. Here we talk about initiating the process. Majority will speak during the vote. To initiate the process, I think it would be wrong to set a threshold as high as majority of some members in the region. Okay, those are my points, but yeah, of course we can always discuss it. And yes, please write down a proposal, counter-proposal, something to discuss. So I answered your questions, at least try to address them. Well, this is, again, this is a discussion. We have a percentage or something. Yeah. Okay. We still have time, at least something we can always discuss and please write your counter proposals. Because again, these are just the proposals I wrote down for the starting point for our discussion. Okay, now we're back to IRP thing, and here I would like to ask David. David, could you please enlighten us?
Thanks, Katrina. It's David here. I am the lead of the IRP implementation oversight team. And as you remember, in Copenhagen, I made presentation to the CCNSO, and I did to some other groups as well, about what's coming forward with respect to supporting organizations and advisory committees with respect to doing work to put together the IRP in its full form based on the new bylaws. And so I think you asked me, Katrina, if I could put something together in writing, and this is what I've done, going through bylaw 4.3, which is that section which deals with IRP. And if we feel as a group that perhaps new guideline language would be appropriate, I'd be happy to try and put together the operative paragraphs for that. But in any event, what I did was go through 4.3 with a view towards apprising supporting organizations of what's coming their way. And I did it broadly. So the first section, I looked at what concerns a supporting organization as a claimant. And so you'll see in what I wrote that clearly supporting organizations can be claimants. That's important because they're not legal organizations. They're not persons. They're not legally incorporated, et cetera, et cetera. So there could have been a question. But no, the definitions say they can be a claimant. And there's a further provision. I didn't mention it here that I cannot offer the defense that a supporting organization is not a legal entity. So no question, supporting organizations could be claimants. Along with that come some obligations. For instance, SOs have to engage in the cooperative engagement process, sort of a conciliatory negotiation trying to see if they can avoid IRP. People have to engage. They can leave it if they think it's being non-productive. But if they don't engage in it and lose the IRP, then there's a financial implication. They might lose some money, and that would be important. It's also noteworthy that each claimant bears its own legal expenses. ICANN will pay for the IRP structure and the administrative costs, but typically people get lawyers to represent them, and it's very expensive to, lawyers cost money. And so each claimant bears their own legal expenses. The next section deals with supporting organization, whatever rights they might have as having approved the PDP. And this has to do with empowered community challenges. And so the bylaws say, look, if the empowered community challenges a PDP, they have to have the approval of that SO that approved the PDP. If they don't have it, the empowered community can't bring an IRP. The next section is that section dealing with what work or what efforts the SOs have to put together in creating a standing panel of IRP members. And this is a difficult area because there's no instructions. The IOT, the Implementation Oversight Team, is volunteering to help in this respect, but the SOs and the EACs need to do certain things. One, they need to look to the secretariat, is what I'll call it, for the IRP. Now, there's one in place now, so there's no crisis in that sense, but, this can be re-tendered or re-looked at. I think that's less important. More important right now, in my opinion, is working with the staff and the board to get people to apply under an expression of interest, and then the SOs and ACs alone have the duty to nominate well-qualified panelists. ICANN board has the right to approve, but that right to approve can't be unreasonably withheld. So here's a level of effort that's going to come up in the next several months that people need to prepare for, and SOs and ACs need to work together, and there's no framework for that right now. And then finally is a note about the IoT itself. This implementation oversight team that I lead was created in Workstream 1 under the charter of the CCWG for accountability. And so we were a CCWG accountability entity. When the bylaws were approved, the IoT is specifically mentioned in the bylaws, and it says the SOs and ACs will create an IoT. Well, they did that, but now it's just, I just wanted to point out, we're now a bylaws creature, this implementation team, and the SOs and the ACs have rights in that respect. So that's it. I mean, it's pretty much a description of what the IRP presents to supporting organizations in a number of facets. Thank you, Katrina.
Thank you very much, David. In case we thought that life is getting easier, now we got this. Let's go back to I want to understand what we need in internal processes to make sure that we are ready. First, concerning an SO as claimant, in case we ever decide to go into this process, I think that, when I was reading it, I thought that in this case we have to act according to the bylaws. And I couldn't think of anything that we would need in terms of internal process. Maybe just we can decide in which cases we can start the process. That's the only thing I can think of. Second, about SO in its capacity as having approved a PDP. Sorry, I do not understand this one. What does it mean, and what? So this really, I try to understand, but I don't understand what it means with all these challenging results of a PDP. Yes, David.
Katrina, hi. Thanks, David. Again, I think what this means is simply this: under the new bylaws, the empowered community has a right to challenge a number of things, including PDP. But whatever right they have to challenge a PDP goes away if the SO that created the PDP does not, as a decisional participant in the empowered community, support that challenge. In other words, for the empowered community to challenge a PDP, they need the absolute agreement of the SO that approved that PDP in order to bring the challenge, irrespective of how many other members of the empowered community want to bring such a claim. They have to have that PDP they have to have the support of the SO that approved that PDP in order to make a claim and go forward. I don't know if that helps, but hopefully it might.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't help. Maybe somebody. Everybody else understands. So let's come again. SO. An SO has a PDP, right? And they have approved the PDP. So it's approved the PDP. So who can start challenging? Now? So for example, okay, let's take concrete example. GNSO has approved the PDP. Can we now start challenging it? David, yep.
It's my understanding that the empowered community can, but also any person can challenge a PDP if that person is harmed by the PDP. And the way they would challenge it is they would say that the board's implementation of the PDP, the board action implementing the PDP, caused them, that person, some harm. And that case would go forward irrespective of these empowered community thoughts. But the empowered community itself can challenge a PDP, but only if they have the approval and the acquiescence, or no, not the acquiescence, the approval of the SO that approved the PDP in the first place. Otherwise, the empowered community cannot make such a challenge. And so we're talking about the empowered community as claimant here. There's a million other potential claimants, but the empowered community as a claimant cannot challenge a PDP unless they have the positive support of the SO that passed that PDP.
Okay. Does this require any internal guidelines?
I would think on this one, it may not require an internal guideline. The empowered community is going to have its own guidelines, and I assume within its guidelines will be, we want to make a claim against this PDP. Bullet number one, do we have the approval of the SO that passed the PDP? If the answer is yes, let's go to the next step. If the answer is no, everything stops. I don't know that we in the CCNSO will need a policy on this. I need to think it through a little bit more, but I would suspect that we may not.
Okay, thanks. But in case somebody wants to challenge the results of PDP, they're going to ask for our support. In that case, we need some clear process how we are going to discuss this support. Bart.
Hi, David. Thanks for the overview. What might be helpful in looking at it is think in terms of procedures. Does the CCNSO Council need to take certain actions to reach out to the community, et cetera, and at what time and based on what are the triggering events? That's normally the easiest way to think through what needs to say. A checklist has the disadvantage of that you check in hindsight if something has happened. But say it should be more like a kind of workflow in language. That's the whole purpose of these guidelines. And if that is necessary for the CCNSO or CCNSO Council to undertake action.
Thank you, Bart. David?
Thanks, Katrina. And thank you, Bart. I agree with Bart that a workflow would be important, and there is action for the CCNSO Council and members to approve bringing a case as a claimant. But with respect to blocking an action by the empowered community to challenge a PDP approved by the CCNSO, I don't know that you need a workflow because the empowered community will have no standing to bring any such claim unless they have the support of the CCNSO. So if you need a process, it's just do we support, would we support an empowered community challenge against our own PDP? So I guess to that extent, I would revise what I just said and said, yes, you would need a workflow to go through the CCNSO members and say, hey, somebody is challenging our PDP. Do we want to let that challenge go forward within the empowered community? I guess you would need a workflow for that. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Or we can just write down our internal guideline that we dismiss any requests to challenge the result of our PDP. And then we're done with that. That would be too easy, perhaps. Okay, so for that one, we apparently need a guideline how to slash request of empowered community to challenge the results of our PDP. And for the next one, for that one I see a lot more complicated work. So one is, I don't know about this administrative support for IRP. What we need to do with that. How we're going to review and vet applications for the standing panel, especially taking into account that there can be hundreds of thousands of them. Very nice. And then, how to nominate members. This apparently has to be done together with the other SDS hold NIC. Somebody has to review all the applications. I'm not sure we're going to solve all the issues, all the problems of the world, of the Viking world, here and now. I don't know, I think maybe we can wait until it's clearer, at least we have some clear way forward. What is expected from us? Okay, I see what's expected from us, but apparently we have to work with other issues. David, please.
Thanks, Katrina. I expect that the implementation oversight team will be corresponding with SOs and ACs with offers to help and perhaps with some suggestions for how to organize this between now and the time of the meeting in Johannesburg. So, I mean, it is a blank slate. The bylaws are very general without much framework in place. And so the IOT, the Implementation Oversight Team, believes that it can well help in helping to organize SOs and ACs to work on this together. So I expect more from the team. And we have a mountain of work that we're plowing through right now, and I think that'll be part of it too. I hope so. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Then I propose that we wait until we receive some ideas on how to solve this. And the last one concerning the IRP-IOP, consulting role in establishing the IRP-IOP. I don't know, nobody has consulted with us, but clearly IOP is already established. Is there anything we need to think about now, or we just consider that you're there, live and kicking? Yes, please, David.
Thank you. Katrina, David again. I actually put this in just in the interest of full disclosure. The IOT was established in Workstream 1, and that's where it was appropriate. There was no bylaw on it. But when the bylaws were approved, as a result of the proposal made by Workstream 1, the IOT became a bylaws creation, and that bylaw says that the SOs and ACs have a consulting role in establishing it. So I just didn't want this discussion to go by of a team that I'm leading without saying, hey, there's a role here for the SOs and ACs in case they ever wish to exercise it. You know, in other words, if SOs and ACs become unhappy with the work of the IOT, they have a way to deal with it. So it's really, I'm making a self-serving statement in a sense, but I don't think there's any action required now. I do think that this is important information that I would like to be out there in the interest of full disclosure. That's really the only reason I put it there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. I think this is a good summary of the things that are related to your IRP. May I ask David and Bart to go through this again, see all these flows, workload, and understand if we need any internal guidelines. Or maybe we can put just clauses into existing guidelines to address all these concerns. Okay, Bart agrees. I see that David agrees too. Okay, that would be excellent. Hope you can find time to make completed by our next call in 2 weeks. So next call is on Monday in 2 weeks. I hope that everybody can make it. Again, by next call, we read all three new guidelines, propose changes. Just please be really concrete. If you don't like something, just come up with a counter proposal, something to discuss. We'll talk in 2 weeks. So thank you very much for your hard work, for you being on the call. And have a nice rest of the day. All good fun. Yes, exactly, David. So thank you very much, and bye-bye.
Bye, all.